storytellers, indigenous elders of Turtle Island, share their stories and teachings. Here's another moment with Ira Timothy, also known as hashtag Indigenous Weirdo.
Part 59, Learning from the Elders. Do not expect an overnight answer or quick teaching. This is the kind of stuff that takes time. Now don't be rude and just all of a sudden go, "Can you tell me about this? What does this mean?" Any knowledge they have to give, you have to earn it. It could take weeks, months, even a year. Moreover, you have to demonstrate that you can be trusted, and when given that knowledge, to be used in a right way and not be thrown willy-nilly all over the place. It helps to do things for them to show care and concern, like make sure they're comfortable. Bring them some coffee or tea and ask how their day was. If you're going to bring them a gift, the practical kind works best. That's the ones they like the most. But don't press too hard or they won't tell you nothing. If you don't go about it the right way, you'll get something that sounds legit, but it's not. They're not dummies. They'll know when you've earned the right to hear what it is they have to say. In many ways, it's the journey where you'll learn the most rather than the destination. Thanks for hearing my words.
All right, this is Veronica Lightning Horse Storytelling Native Wisdom, What to Do with Mankind.
This is a good one. Please share to keep these stories alive. So once when the world was younger, the raven came and realized that they needed to call a meeting of all the animal nations. So she flew everywhere, making this call. And all the animals came. They gathered beside the ocean because even the dolphin and even the whale wanted to be a part of this meeting. When all the animals finally arrived, they realized most of them was there and that was enough. So they began the meeting. And the meeting was about what to do with mankind. See, the animals were angry, for mankind was not taking care of the land. They were not honoring each other. They were not honoring the animals. They were consuming and destroying and seemed to have lost respect for the mother. So they began to toss around ideas. What shall we do? What shall we do? The bear cried out, "Just get rid of them. If they're not here, there could be no destruction." Many of the animals raised their voices, agreeing with bear. Cougar pipes up, "No, no, no. We should eat them. They're tasty. We shouldn't let them go to waste. Let us eat them." "Yes, yes," many of the other animals raise their voices to agree with cougar. Turtle pipes up, "No, no, no, we should respect life. Let's just put them all together in one place and post guards so that they can't leave their area, and that's their plot of land." "Yes, yes," many of the birds cried. "We will help with this. Keep them contained, keep them contained." This went on all day and all night, all the animals raising their voices, fighting and arguing amongst each other. And finally, Raven called, "Shh, wait. We have called this meeting to discuss the problem of mankind, but mankind is not at this meeting. We must call them. We must call them to see what they have to say for themselves." The animals grumbled, some of them in fear. "No, no, I don't want mankind here." "No, we must." So they sounded the talk to call mankind. And waited. Nothing. "Let's try again. Let's try again." So they sounded the call again. And waited. Nothing. The animals raised their voices again. "See, see, they don't even have the respect to come and sit at this meeting to defend themselves, to hear our complaints. Enough, enough. We should be done with man." Oh, the wise voice of Raven. "Please, I believe we should always give 3 chances to make amends and repairs. Sound the conch one more time." And then a moment later, they heard a howl. Off in the distance, many feathers ruffled. many a fur arose. They knew this call. And sure enough, here came trotting in the Wolf Nation. All the animals and the animals fell silent, listening. The Alpha Wolf spoke. "We have an idea. I think you will all agree. Some of us have agreed that the problem with mankind is that they have forgotten how to love. They have forgotten the importance of love. So some of our brothers have agreed that they are going to go into the nation of mankind and they are going to remind them how to love. They are going to teach them the power of love and what it can do for healing." The animals, looking back and forth between each other, but this time no voices were raised. "Are we in agreement?" "Yes, we're in agreement." And half the wolf pack turned and trotted off to find their places among mankind as ambassadors of love. And this is where the Dog Nation comes from. "I believe that this is truly the problem with mankind. We have forgotten how to love because we have forgotten how to love ourselves. How do we love ourselves? We don't want to be arrogant. We don't want to be full of ourselves. We don't like that. We don't like to see that, people parading themselves around being prideful. But it's not about being prideful. It is about being able to cherish oneself. To love all the parts of ourselves, even the angry parts, the shadow parts, the greedy parts. Doesn't mean we let it loose. But accept it and love it is necessary, because if we do not love ourselves, how are we going to love anyone else? Find that love for yourself, relatives. We weren't taught massages and haircuts and days off. These are acts of self-love. Real self-love, it's a feeling. It's a feeling that you have inside. Just like when you fell in love for the very first time. It's a wave that sweeps over you that all these other things seem to fall away. They just don't have importance anymore. Because you're full of that incredible feeling. This is what we must learn to nurture and elicit in ourselves so that we can give it to others. Because when we are full of love, and we honor and cherish and respect ourselves, then we will respect the animal kingdoms. Then we will respect the earth. Then we will see her in her suffering and be moved to do something about it. Just like when we see a friend of ours who is in pain. You can't not help. Find that love for yourself, relatives. And much love to you. Have a beautiful day.
Here's Mohawk Nation's Kenneth Littlehawk storytelling called Relations.
Welcome, all of you. Every nation, every culture, every color, every hue. Open your heart so you may hear more with your spirit, less with your ear. The elders taught me all life is dependent on all life, and the treatment of it reveals the depth of our respect and compassion for the all-inclusive environment, plants, animals, rivers, and each other. Too many have forgotten. We all speak a common language: pain, sorrow, joy, and the hope that we will not be treated with prejudice and discrimination. It can no longer be ignored. We are all related from inside the earth, where its warmth keeps the gravity of compassion alive in the rhythm of our heartbeat. Can you think of a better time to start than now? Yes, now is the time. Why don't
Elder Robert Belgar talks about teepees and the 15 poles.
Most teepees consist of 15 poles. 13 of them on the inside, 2 of them on the outside. And it talks about balance. There's 6 poles on the left, 6 poles on the right, and the one pole that the teepee is tied to is called a chief pole. It's referred to as a chief pole that represents the Creator. Every time you come inside a teepee, you bow your head to show respect for the chief, to show respect for the Creator. On the outside, the 2 poles, one represents the female, one represents the male, so that they're always in balance. They're never fighting, they're always keeping balance. That's what life is all about. When you set up a teepee, you start off with 3 poles. First one is love, second one is obedience, the third one is kinship. Everything is based on that first pole of love. Love is key in everything that as a human people that we do. The 7 grandfather teachings talk about, the very first teaching is the eagle, and that represents love. So we start off with the first teepee pole on this side of the door. Here on the left side is love. Next pole is thankfulness. Third pole is faith. Then comes strength. Then comes obedience. Obedience, as we all know, learning to listen. And then after that comes cleanliness. And then comes the chief pole, which represents the Creator. And on that side of the chief pole is happiness. And then comes sharing. And then comes kinship. And then comes humility. And then comes good child rearing. And then the last pole on that side of the door is respect. When you set up a teepee, you wrap around 4 times. The very first wrap is love and respect for the Creator. The next wrap is love and respect for all of creation. The third wrap is love and respect for our fellow human beings. And the last one is love and respect for yourself. Once you have that love and respect inside of you, it's like money in your pocket. If you haven't got that love and respect, then you can't have anything. All of these pins here, it's like a ladder. It's our ladder of success. As you grow higher, you learn. Every year, every time you set up a teepee, you burn a little bit. It takes a long time. And when you first set up a teepee, you have a ceremony, you put tobacco down to Mother Earth to show that you're asking for forgiveness because you're going to get harmed and this pain's into the ground.
This is Hopi Nation's Ramsen Lama Tawan, a storytelling called All I Need.
I live in a 8-foot by 16-foot tiny house, essentially. It has a couch that turns into a bed. It has a little kitchenette in there. Nature is my bathroom, but that's all I need because I know that my children love me. That's what's important. You know, I don't need a shower with golden faucets in it. I don't need to live in a mansion. You know, my approach to living as an individual is learning how to become a minimalist without punishing yourself. Well, our belief in having long hair is that when I die someday and I cross over to the spirit side, and the long dark streaks of rain that you see coming down from the clouds, we say that's the hair of the people that's flowing down. So my hair is rain. And even though I'm not here in this world, I'm over on the other side, I'm still sharing my life with other people by bringing rain. You create your own world by your thoughts and your actions. That's what we call free will. Hopis believe that all life is sacred, but we are also given free will, and I should not foist my beliefs on other people. Let everybody decide for themselves. If you want a solution in your life, you got to have a problem. problems are temporary. If you create a permanent problem, it's because you're not putting forth the effort and you don't have the desire and the motivation to deal with it. You let that problem fester. So you got to be motivated. You got to have the desire to overcome the problem. If not, just live with it. I'm surrounded by negativity everywhere that I go. But that doesn't mean that I have to contaminate myself with that. The idea of the corn, they're varied, there are many colors, there are different ones. And the instruction was, pick the corn that you're going to live by. Let it nourish you. Nourish yourself with this corn that you choose. It doesn't matter which one you pick. It's all the same substance. And they will all take you to the same place. The corn symbolizes the choices of values. And if you want to use the word religion, and understanding that, Hopi people, we do not seek converts because everybody has their own corn. At some point in time, someone's going to come and tell you that their corn is better than yours and you should be eating their corn. And some of these people will try to force feed you their corn. And he just said, those are the ones that you have to be careful. Money is now a part of our lives. It's never going away. But to do what you're doing just for the sake of the dollar, of making money, you're doing it for the wrong reason. You're creating art to help to heal people. That's why you create art. As long as you're doing this to help others, then your needs will be provided for. But over time, you come to understand, do I really need this stuff? Do I really need a huge TV? Do I really need to live in a big house? Do I really need to have 3 or 4 vehicles like some people do? Life can be more enriching with less possessions. Money is okay. Let's face it, it's not going away. It does have its uses, but you get into trouble when you start to overindulge and you take it for granted. That's when problems begin.
What is your responsibility and what is not? This is Veronica Lightning Horse with an elder story that holds the answer.
This story was told to me by a Lakota elder some time ago, and it just came up for me, so I wanted to share. So once when the world was young, there was a medicine man. He had studied his whole life to help people, and he had a good heart. All he really did was serve. One day he got a call. A messenger came to the village, saying that there was a village across the river, and they were sick. They were very, very sick. So he packed everything he could as quickly as he could and set off to go see if he could save this village. In order to get there, he had to take a long, winding path that was up against a sheer cliff. On the other side was a river. In order to get to the crossing, and he was hurrying as fast as he could, he only slept during the darkest hours to make sure that he didn't wander off and go over the edge as he made his way. Around day 2, he came to a place on this crossing, on this path, and there was a man standing there holding a rope. The other end was tied around his belly. And the man says to him as he approaches, "Will you hold this rope? Please, I need your help." And the medicine man, wanting to help, grabbed the end of the rope, asking, "Why do you want me to hold the..." And before he could finish the sentence, the man just drops off the side of the cliff and he grabs the rope and he's leaning back against it, holding it. "What are you doing? What are you doing? Why did you do that? Climb back up. Come on, climb back up." The man, hanging at the other end of the rope, says, "Just hold on, just hold on." The medicine man, not knowing what he was doing, not knowing what was happening, held on. But the rope started to slip. The man dangling at the other end felt that slip. "Please hold on to the rope. Don't drop me. I'll drop it to the river. I'll drown. Don't let me die. Tie it around your waist." The medicine man calls down to him, "Climb up. I can't hold you. The rope is slipping. Tie it around your waist. Tie it around your waist." So the medicine man does. He ties it around his waist. And he's standing there, leaning all his weight back up against this rope, calling down to the man that is dangling above the river, off the side of a cliff. "I need you to climb back up. I have someplace to be. There are people that are waiting for me." The man just screams back up, "Don't drop the rope. Don't let me die. I don't want to drown. Don't let me die." The medicine man tries with all his might, pulling the rope, trying to drag, bodily drag this man back up to the safety of the path, calling down to him, "I need you to help me. Climb up the side of the cliff. I'm trying to get you back up to safety." But the man just dangles there, continuing to call up, "Don't let go of the rope. If you let go of the rope, I will fall into the river. I could die. I could drown. Don't kill me." Hours go by. The medicine man's body is trembling with fatigue, holding this weight, calling back and forth with this man, having no idea what's going on, watching as the sun sets, knowing that he needs to get to this village. He has things to do. Finally, he calls down to the man, "I have to go. You're not telling me what you're doing. You're not helping yourself climb back up to safety. You're not helping me drag you back up to safety. I have to go." "No! Don't let me drown. I could die. Don't kill me. You'll kill me if you let the rope drop." The medicine man stands there on the side of the cliff, his heart breaking in his chest. All he wants to do is help. All he wants to do is serve. But this man just won't help himself. He won't help him help him. Knowing that it was the man's choice to jump off the side of the cliff to begin with. Praying to his ancestors, praying to his creator for guidance. "What do I do?" As he watches the sunset, knowing that people are sick and suffering. Many people. That if he could just get there, he could help. Maybe he could save them. Finally, the heavy heart. He unties the rope from his waist and calls down to the man, "This is your last chance. I need you to climb up. Help me get you up here." At first, there's only silence, and he wonders what happens. The man calls up, "If you drop that rope and I die, my death is on your hands." The medicine man breathed. "One life for 100? No, I can't." And he let the rope drop, heard the cry, and a great splash as the man hit the water. He collected his belongings with tears in his eyes, saying prayers for the man, that he swims, that he remembers he can swim and he can make it. And he continues. With each step he takes towards the village, though, his heart feels lighter because he knew that this was not his fault. The man made the choice. The man refused to help him. The man refused to help himself. And that burden was not on his shoulders. When the medicine man made it to the village, he made it barely in the nick of time. If he had spent 2 more hours holding the man on the rope, he could have lost the entirety of the village, men, women, and children, all. And so it goes from a lightened burden to joy in his heart, knowing that he had made the right choice, believing in his heart that the man chose to swim instead of sink. I believe this story carries so much weight for us today because many people make choices, their choices that cause them hardship, that can make them sick, that can cause them pain. And we try to save them. We can put a lot of effort and energy into trying to save our friends. But if they're not willing to help themselves, if they're not willing to hear or take what you're offering, or if they can't receive it, then your voice, your energy, could be used to help people that do want it, that are listening, that find your energy, your love, and your wisdom useful. It is not your burden to bear, to carry someone else. In fact, many times, if you are preventing someone else from suffering, if you are saving them, if you are digging them out of trouble, pain can be the greatest motivational teacher. Suffering sometimes is what makes us into the great beings that we could be. So do not deny someone their path, and do not deny yourself your own. And if you can't help someone, just know that you did everything that you could, and that is all you could ever do. Much love, relatives. Have a beautiful day.
Elder Wally Brown of the Navajo Nation on traditional storytelling teachings.
Traditional teachings of our people, there are a lot of things that we can share with people that are actually available from other tribes. We have a great spirit, and the way that we come to the understanding of the presence and the existence of this great spirit is the two boys that made their journey to their father, and they of course had a lot of opposition along the way, and they went there to acquire weapons from him so that they could come back and destroy all of the evil monsters that were killing and destroying all of the Dene, or the five-fingered being. And their journey was not easy, it was very difficult, and they met people along the way that were mentors and would help them to accomplish their objective, and so they, until they made their journey to their father. So in the prayers of our people, when they're offered today, they say, Nihitha-juhana-eh. Now, that part of the wording of a prayer, Nihitha-juhana-eh, a lot of times our people misunderstand that word. The actual word that is being said is Nihitha-jigo-nihina-ini. It was the way that it is said in some of the songs and prayers. The one that sees us and watches over us by sunlight, or sometimes they might say, the one that sees us and watches over us by moonlight and by other source of light. And Nikiketintini, which is very important because that is the light of truth, and it is something that comes from Nikije or Nikita. The Shittin is sometimes something we say when he recognizes truth. Or Dobatintinda is to say that he is not getting the light of truth. And so it's very important to understand in the teachings of our people, our young people especially, that we do not pray to the sun. We pray to the being that is the supreme being that is recognized as the father, Nihita, or our maker. And if you want to use the word creator, that's fine. But it is that he is a supreme being. He is the great spirit. And he is the one that is the maker of all things. He is the one that provides us all the goodness in that we have. And so he is the one that we ask to help us to maintain our journey on the beauty way path. He is the one that we make the corn pollen prayer offering to, or the sacred stone offerings to. Nihita-juhana-eh, or the one that watches us and takes and cares for us and observes us and protects us by the light of the sun. And so that's one being, and that is the great spirit. He is the father of the holy people. He is the main sacred being. There's another being that we call the evil spirit. The evil spirit is there. And I don't like to talk about him because a lot of times people want to have a lot of information. They can get all of the information that they need to become a witch or whatever. A person that utilizes the power of influence to do things that are not right or not good. You can get that from other sources, but you can't get it from the Dene. And it is very interesting to listen to the teachings of how this evil influence or evil being came into existence. He was considered a holy person at one time, but he, among the other holy people, he didn't get his way. And a lot of the things that he suggested because of him came about all the things that can be thought of as evil and as unsacred, as corruption, to all things that is good and then all things that are beautiful. And then we have one ceremony that I don't attend anymore and I will not attend. I don't like the ceremony. And there's even part of the enemy way ceremony. There's certain portions I don't like at all, and because it's been so corrupted. And I think it's because of the influence of the one Ye. They sometimes refer to him as the evil one. And when people really get annoyed by someone or have some real serious bad feelings to someone, they say, "Chidi tahoto kata," which means, "May he go and be among the most evil of evil people in his demise." And so that's not a good thing. That is not a good thing. But it is then giving that person to the most evil one, the Chindi. When people would not accept his ways, he set fire to the second world. And so the things that we are told about the evil one. Traditional teachings of our people, there are a lot of things that we can share with people that are actually available from other tribes. We have a great spirit, and the way that we come to the understanding of the presence and the existence of this great spirit is the two boys that made their journey to their father, and they of course had a lot of opposition along the way, and they went there to acquire weapons from him so that they could come back and destroy all of the evil monsters that were killing and
Veronica Lightning Horse Storytelling. Heaven is on the other side of hell.
My very first ayahuasca journey, I learned that heaven was on the other side of hell. And it's 4.5, almost 5 years later, and that's still very true. And I find that a lot of people, myself included, sometimes when I'm in that hell, sometimes you even lose the desire to get to the heaven, to get the relief, because it just feels hopeless. That this is just my life. This hell that I'm in, this living nightmare. And that is the time where you've got to reach out for help, for community, to someone. Because that hell that you're in, the bliss, the goodness, the relief, the holy shit, I made it. On the other side, that's everything. That's what gives us the power. It's what gives us the juice. There's always courage inside us, even in the darkest night, because we can't not live. And we know that when we're in that hell, this isn't living. And this is not what I'm here for. It's why it sucks so bad. It's why it hurts so much. We're doing a workshop this weekend, and the courage of the people that I'm witnessing, myself included, because I love these people I invited to participate in this, and it is the way through. And to willingly step into your dark places, into that dark night, into that shadow, it takes a lot. But isn't it better than living in it? To show up for yourself? To choose to go into that dark night instead of just try to muddle through it? There is hope, you guys. There is another side. There is the other side. Heaven is absolutely on the other side of hell. And I'm sending you all my love, relatives. You will make it. I made it. You'll make it too. Much love.
This is Elder Shirley Crowshoe of the Piikani Nation, storytelling called Grandfather.
Greetings, everyone. I am known as Mishaminiskim. My Blackfoot name means ancient or longtime buffalo stone. I am going to share a story and the life of my five times great grandfather by the name of Brings Down the Sun. As a child growing up, I thought, oh, someday I'm going to see him, what he looks like, you know, and that. So I would ask her, and she would just tell me, you know, Kika, wait, and that. Grandmother passed on. We met this gentleman. He came to my parents, and he gave him a copy of this book. He said, in this book, there's stories about you. There's stories about your, you know, your people. So, of course, you know, as children, we all started to look at it and that. Lo and behold, the first photo in this picture was Natusi and Mipi. So I got to see what he looked like. In 1910, Brings Down the Sun passed away. And a lot of the documents, you know, that I had come across in my research, he was referred to as Apiso Makan, running wolf. Where he got the name was my grandmother said that he would always go off and do vision quests. And one of the vision quest sites, he was given the power, an incredible power, and that was to be able to have control of weather. So he went and he, you know, he had a whistle and he had an eagle fan, also what we call a weather dancer in the sun dance. He would, you know, that was also another role that he was known for. Anyway, so he started dancing out and that and singing, and that, you know, he had to whistle, eagle whistle, and his feather that he, you know, a fan, eagle fan. And then, you know, the storm was almost on top of them, and, you know, he just lifted up, I guess, his fan and that, and pulled the clouds apart, the clouds that came apart. So early in the morning, he told his people the night before, early in the morning, I want you to all get up early and look to the east where Natusi comes up. And that. So all the people, you know, that were in the encampment and that, the sun was just coming up. And again, you know, he was dancing and singing and that. And then, you know, he was able to get the sun to move up and down and that. And so the people told him, now you are Natusi and Mipi, Brings the Sun now.
Veronica Lightning Horse, storytelling how the robin got his red breast.
I had a couple of requests for this story, so I'm going to go ahead and share it. So please share to keep these stories alive. Also, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube under Veronica Lightning Horse if you want to follow me there. How the Robin Got His Red Breast. Once, when the world was much, much younger, many of the people still lived in caves. The robin was just a dusty gray little fellow with a beautiful song. And he loved to greet the people as they would come out of their cave in the morning to greet the sun and say their morning prayers. He would sing them a sweet song of joy for the new day to begin. Then came a winter that seemed to never end. The people had never seen a winter like this before. It was cold and it was dark, and they had not stored enough food nor enough wood to keep themselves fed and warm. It got to the point that they barely had any wood or food left at all. And so they were forced to send many of the young people out, some to go gather wood, for there was nothing left nearby, and some to gather food, whatever they could find. The mothers, the babies, the children, the grandfathers and grandmothers all stayed home in the cave. The grandfather was committed to keeping the fire alive, to keep everyone warm, but had very little to do so. So he tried to ration it out as best as he could. Grandmother would take over during the day. Grandfather would keep the fire alive at night. And this went on for days, until there was only just a few wood chips and branches left. And it was cold. The people began to move slower with cold and hunger. But grandfather kept trying to keep the fire alive, until one day there was only embers left. And he would have to blow on those embers to keep the fire going, what little heat that poor little fire could emit. They would gather together, cuddling for warmth as close to the fire as they could get at night. But one night, the grandfather, so tired and weak from hunger, fell asleep, and the fire died down. That morning, the robin woke up to sing his happy song to greet the people. Only no people came out of the cave. His heart was seized by fear. He flew into the cave, and he saw all the people lying down, frost on their faces and their hair. Oh no, his heart sank. He saw the fire. It was almost completely dead. So he flew to the fire and began beating his wings, giving the fire as much air as he could, trying to keep it alive. And the embers grew warmer. He cried to the people in the cave, "Wake up! Wake up! The fire is dying!" But no one moved. Terror gripped his heart as he beat his wings to reinvigorate that fire. Nobody moved. The voice of fear crept in, telling him, "They're gone. Just give up." But the voice of faith and determination said, "No, no. Perhaps if they're warm enough, they are still here. They are still here." So he beat his wings. Ash began to settle all over the cave. Still no one stirred. His chest and his wings began to glow hot from the fire. He was so uncomfortable, the voice of fear growing louder. "They're gone. Give up. You are too late." He had to fight, to dig, to strengthen the voice of faith and determination in him. And he kept beating his wings, focusing only on the voice of faith, praying it wasn't too late. And then he heard a baby cry. Reinvigorated, he continued to beat his wings. Oh, but he was so hot, his chest was burning, but he refused to give up. He prayed for strength because he had no idea how long he would have to keep it up, how many of them were gone, how many of them remained, but he refused to give in. And just when he thought he had no more strength left in his little gray body, he heard a call from behind him. And in came rushing in the young ones, carrying wood. They cried in fear, dropped the wood because none of the people were stirring, and they went quickly, one of them, to build up the fire. The poor robin dropped exhausted to the floor. One of them scooped him up and carried him to the corner. "Oh, Robin, thank you, thank you, thank you." As the cave warmed, people began to stir. And Robin, exhausted laying there, watched them come to life. And fell asleep, knowing he had done all he could do and the people would live to hear his happy song once more. The next morning, he woke up in the cave with the people, and everyone awoke with him. And he did. He sang his happy song to the people. But the people stared at him strangely. What? Said the robin. And they pointed to his chest, and he looked down. And there in his chest was a beautiful glowing red that we still see the robin carry to this day. So when we see the robin with his red breast, we thank him for his devotion, for saving the people that long winter so long ago. I loved this story since I was a girl, because it always reminded me that we do have that duality within us. We have the voice of fear, the one that cries to us, give up, it's not good enough, we don't deserve, maybe we're not worthy, it's too hard, it's not worth it. And sometimes the voice of faith and determination is much, much quieter than the voice of fear. But if, like the robin, we tune into that voice, we work at building up the voice of faith and the determination that yes, we can, especially when following our passion, our excitement for doing what we know is good and right in our heart, then that voice can lead us to a place that we may have never expected we could go. So when you find yourself in a place of pressure, perhaps even between the rock and the hard place, where the only choices before you are painful and slightly less painful, pay attention. Remember the robin, to what voice you are tuning into. Much love, relatives. Have a beautiful new year.
Elder John Trudell, storytelling balance.
My name's John Trudell. I know that humanity is not living in balance with nature. It's not happening. I mean, it's more than a little out of balance. Humanity is actually, at this point, almost going against nature. It's beyond living out of balance. With humanity going against nature, that there's a small percentage, a small number of human beings that are behind this and driving it and imposing it upon just humanity in general. It reduces the opportunities for human beings to continue to participate in the evolutionary reality indefinitely. It's bringing a definite conclusion to the ability of the human beings to participate in this evolutionary reality. We live in a technologic, perceptional, actual reality, where a part of that technologic reality is that the civilizing processes, it erases the memory of the human being. It erases the memory from the human being of being a human being. It's almost like a spirit, a severing of our connection to any spiritual reality. And once that has been imprinted into the consciousness of the human beings, see, then I think that's what makes these other things possible. It isn't that we're, as human beings, we're bad. It's got nothing to do with our badness. What it has to do is that there's a program going on that literally feeds off of the being part of human, eating our spirit. All right, and in order for all that to happen, then these imprinting things have to happen to our consciousness, and a part of that is to erase the memory of the human being about being a human being. See, so we no longer participate in reality perceiving reality as human beings. We participate in reality as feeling as either like we're oppressed culturally, ethnically, gender-wise, class-wise, but we participate in reality from the eyes of being victimized and very fearful and insecure. We don't think like human beings. But that reason for that is because there's been a deliberate suppression of our memory of that identity. But on this planet, there's an industrial ruling class. And this industrial ruling class is the smallest percentage of human beings on this planet. And this industrial ruling class, the governments that are created to serve the needs of this industrial ruling class. And one of the needs of this industrial ruling class is they create these governments and to some degree these religions, all right, and these economic systems as a way of controlling the mass of human beings that they're feeding off. Think more and believe less. Recognize that we're human beings and our connection to the reality of power is in that identity. Human. Our bone, flesh, and blood, our DNA, we're literally made up of the metals, minerals, and liquids of the earth. We're part of the earth. We're shapes of the earth, like everything of the earth. And we have being, our spirit. Part of recognizing of ourselves is that to recognize our intelligence and understand the value of our intelligence. Because as human beings, our ability to access the reality of our power is in through clear and coherent use of our intelligence. See, our intelligence, that's the portal how we manifest and access our relationship into the reality of power as humans, is through the use of our intelligence. But we've been imprinted and programmed, you know, I mean, basically, where we're at now in the evolution of human beings, we're basically in a period of time in this industrial technologic world where the majority of the human beings participate in this reality based upon their fears and their doubts and insecurities, so their perception of their inabilities. See, all that was imprinted in there to make us not recognize ourselves. To understand the power and recognize the power of our intelligences, let's say, through our fears and our doubts and our insecurities, how bad can we make ourselves feel? And how does that affect the people around us? Well, that's power. That's our power. That's a manifestation of our personal power. But we've been imprinted to use it in this kind of a way. A component to that is to give thanks to their, however one perceives the Creator, give thanks to the Creator, number one, for life, and number two, for the gift of intelligence. To show respect for this, maybe because we need to show respect to our intelligence, and maybe it's a part of our thanks that we give on a daily basis, in a ritualistic way. Because our intelligence, to me, I mean, it's like our imagination, our creativity, our thoughts, and then our understanding or misunderstanding, and then our actions is what we manifest. And I think that it's time for us to understand, look at, recognize, and attempt to understand the value of our intelligence, because whatever struggle is ahead of us, if we are to continue to participate in the evolutionary reality as human beings, it's going to take clear and coherent use of our intelligence to do it. Generationally, collectively, individually, but that's what it is going to take. Everything that has ever been done to create these emotional distortions in us has been done to keep us from using our intelligence clearly and coherently. You know, we need to recognize ourselves. We really need to recognize ourselves. Then we can synchronize all the other things in a much more synchronized way.
Veronica Lightning Horse, storytelling Native Acts of Love.
It's cold outside today, so I'll tell a desert story. This was told to me by an Apache elder, a medicine man. So once when the world was younger, there was a man of medicine, and he served his village very well. Sometimes he would travel, but he preferred to stay close to the village. There was water there at the village, a beautiful river. One day, as the women were out washing, the children were out playing in the water, he decided to take a walk that day. And as he walked, he looked at the beauty of the land, what little green there was, but still marveling at the life that would spring up because of the water. And he came to a place where he saw a little scorpion splashing, gotten too far into the water, fighting to swim, trying to get out of the water, drowning. And he felt for that scorpion. So he reached down with his left hand and scooped it out of the water and attempted to carry it up to the bank to set it free. The scorpion, scared, not knowing what's happening, stung him in the hand, jumped off his hand, fell right back into the water. The medicine man stood there, sucking on his stung hand, watching it begin to swell. Oh, pain burning up into his wrist. He knew the scorpion wouldn't kill him, and he had medicine for it, but still, it stung. He looked back down at the scorpion, and there he was, struggling to get out of the water. And he knew that scorpion was going to drown. And he knew that scorpion had to be so scared. So he reached down with his right hand and scooped that little scorpion up out of the water. Again, the scorpion stung him in the right hand now. Fell back down into the water. Oh, now he's nursing his other hand. Oh, that stings. Both hands now burning. And he looked at that scorpion with a scowl on his face. I'm trying to help you. The scorpion just fought for its life. The medicine man looked up the sky, looked back down. Fine. And he reached down with both hands, scooped the scorpion up and flung it towards the riverbank as gently as he could, but still had to flung it. The scorpion hit the bank, rolled over, stopped, turned around, looked at him, his stinger still raised in the air. The medicine man, sucking on his hand, "You're free. Go. Go live your life." And the scorpion turned and ran away. He didn't know it, but the chief's son was watching with quite a few other children this whole process. And they came to him and said, "Elder, why did you let that scorpion sting you? If it was me and he'd have stung me, I'd have let him drown." Another one piped up, "I would have squished him as soon as I rescued him from the water. How dare he sting me, especially when I'm trying to help him." The medicine man smiles at the children. "Oh, children, do you realize that it's in the scorpion's nature to be angry, to be aggressive, especially when they're scared? It's just their nature, children. He wasn't intentionally trying to hurt me. It's just what the scorpion does." The children still grumbled. He said, "But listen, I am a healer. I love all life. I take care of all life. And when there is a life in need, it is within my nature to help. So am I to deny myself my nature, change my nature, because someone else is aggressive or mean? Because someone else might sting me because of their nature?" The children thought about it. And the medicine man tells them, "Children, no matter how many times I get stung or stomped or criticized or yelled at, I will not change my nature, nor will I demand, expect, or punish anyone or anything else for not changing theirs." This story was huge for me in my life because it was at a time that I was sacrificing a lot of myself to help, and the criticism and outright hatred that I was getting many times, the attacks, it made me want to harden my heart. It made me want to stop the work, to stop helping people. Let them then. They're choosing to suffer. Let them. It's their choice. And when the elder told me this story, I did realize what was happening. Because of my hurt, I'm sitting there and I'm willing to change my nature, what's in my heart to do. Now, I'm not saying that hatred or cruelty was their nature, but it's in all of our natures to go that direction. It's also in our natures to be loving and kind and helpful. So even when I got stung, even when you get stung, please don't let it change who you are and what you have to offer the world. Live up to your nature. See yourself and take care of yourself. Much love, relatives.